So thank you very much. And so good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I would like first to thank the organizers for the invitation to this very stimulating meeting in a wonderful setting. And so today I'm going to talk about novel electronic states at oxide surfaces and interfaces. And we have seen in a lot of the talks yesterday that even the bulk materials show a very complex behavior, which is still not completely understood. However, surfaces or interfaces offer the possibility to combine such properties in one composite material. And not only this, they give the possibility to generate novel electronic behavior. And one central question in oxide surfaces and interfaces is the question of polarity. And it was yesterday already Peter Bamonte gave us a very nice introduction to this topic, which makes it easier for me today. So polar are such surfaces that contain charged layers and a dipole moment of the building unit perpendicular to the surface. And if we add these building units, finally, in this ionic picture of Tasker that was already established in the 70s, gives a diverging surface energy. This is the so-called polar catastrophe. So both this ionic model of Tasker and the so-called autocompensation rule say that such surfaces are unstable and they should not exist. And they suggest that such surfaces should change severely their surface stoichiometry, either by an atomic reconstruction, like ordering of surface defects, or by faceting of the surface. However, these models, and up to now, these oxide surfaces do not differ from the behavior of semiconductor heterostructures. However, these models rely on the valence states in the bulk materials. However, on surfaces, we can have strong rearrangements of the atoms through structural and electronic relaxations, which themselves can support the compensation of polarity, but cannot resolve this problem. And on the other hand, there can be strong changes in the electronic structure, like an electronic reconstruction or metallization that can compensate the surface. And when we are dealing with complex transition metal oxides with multivalent states, we can have much more complex correlation-driven mechanisms, like, for example, charge ordering that can help compensate these surfaces. And what I would like to address today also is what happens if we just have several layers of a polar film? Are we already in the regime of the polar catastrophe? So today I'm going to discuss two topics. One is the surface termination and water adsorption on the magnetite 001 surface. And the second one is lanthanum aluminide strontium titanate superlattices, which I'm going to oppose to the behavior of thin lanthanum aluminide films on a strontium titanate substrate. So why magnetite? Magnetite has a lot of versatile applications, for example, in paleomagnetism, as it records the direction of the Earth's magnetic field. It plays a role in the orientation of creatures like this magnetotactic bacterium or birds. And it also plays a role in a lot of environmental and catalytic processes. But why it has attracted a lot of attention is as a potential material for spintronics applications, because there was a half-metallic behavior suggested predicted for the bulk material. So here you see the density of states of the bulk material, and you see a band gap in the majority spin direction and 100% spin polarization. So magnetite has an inverse spinel structure, and if we truncate the crystal in the 001 direction, we either have a termination of tetrahedral irons or a termination with octahedral irons and oxygen. So both of these terminations are polar of type 3 after the scheme of Tasker and have been so far disregarded from crystallographic studies as possible terminations of the crystal. And as I already said, task scheme suggests strong reconstructions of the surface. And indeed, experimental studies have shown that there is a square root two reconstruction of the surface. And here you can see a lead picture of the surface showing the ground structure and superstructure spots. So most of the models that were proposed in the literature were based on fulfilling this autocompensation rule. Like here, what you see, a termination with a half A layer where 50% of the tetrahedral iron on the surface is missing, and several other models. And we have studied all of those models in the framework of up in situ thermodynamics, where here you see the surface energy as a function of the chemical potential of oxygen. And this chemical potential of oxygen can be transferred in oxygen pressures for a given annealing temperature. So as one can see, such compensated terminations do not depend on the oxygen pressure. However, non-stoichiometric terminations, like the A-layer termination, are quite dependent on the pressure and also, as one would expect, quite unstable. What was quite surprising is that the other termination with the B layer, as shown here, was quite stable over a broad range of oxygen pressures. And indeed, however, the problem with this termination is that it does not show the surface periodicity observed in experiments. However, it turned out that this termination is unstable with respect to a distortion in the surface layer, and the surface is finally terminated with such a modified B layer, which shows such a wave-like structure on the surface. So here we have a stabilization of the surface by bulk truncation, which is a symmetry reduction by distortion in the surface layer and not by ordering of surface vacancies. And only at oxygen-poor conditions, we have a termination by an oxygen layer with vacancies on the surface. So this type of termination was also confirmed by STM experiments, which show this wavy behavior on the surface. And here you see a simulation of the electron using the electron density from the DFT calculations, and also surface X-ray diffraction and lead experiments support this termination. So the question was, magnetite plays a role in a lot of catalytic processes and in the binding and reduction of heavy metals or arsenic. These processes typically take place in an aqueous environment. And one question was, how does water adsorption influence the surface of magnetite? How does water adsorb, whether it adsorbs molecular or dissociative, and how it influences the electronic properties of the surface? So in order to study this, we have performed calculations for different configurations of water, varying the orientation of the water molecules and also the concentration of these molecules. And finally, because we have added an additional type of molecules to the gas phase, this results in a three-dimensional phase diagram. So here you see the surface energy as a function of the two chemical potentials of oxygen and water. And as you can see here, it's difficult to distinguish what are the most stable terminations. But this can be done if we look from the bottom to this phase diagram. So here are the most stable surface terminations for given oxygen and water chemical potentials. So if we don't have water in the system at oxygen-poor conditions, we have this termination with oxygen vacancies on the surface. With growing oxygen pressure, we have then the dominance of the modified B layer shown here. However, as soon as we have water in the system, water starts to dissociate in surface vacancies. As you can see here, this is this scratch region here. And at higher coverages, we obtain a crossover to a mixed adsorption mode. So here you can see this. So here the surface is completely saturated with water molecules. And we see that every second molecule dissociates, and there is and this termination is stabilized by the formation of hydrogen bonds between the OH groups and the water molecules, building such a network on the surface. So what is characteristic for this mixed adsorption mode? Here, side view of cut through the oxygen and the water molecules, is that we have two characteristic bond lengths of the water molecule and the oxygen and the OH group to the surface of 2.09 and 1.97 angstroms. And this difference in the bond length is confirmed also in the quantitative lead analysis supporting this termination. And additionally, the lead measurements show also a lifting of the surface reconstruction. As you can see here, the superstructure spots disappear after exposure to water vapor. So magnetite is, even the bulk material, is quite an interesting compound, as it shows the so-called Verweij transition. This Verweij transition is connected with a change in, with a reduction in symmetry. And it is also connected to a strong change in the electronic properties, as we have a transition from a metal at high temperatures to either semiconductor or an insulator at low temperatures. And the type of, so a charge and orbital ordering of iron on the octahedral sites is the origin of this transition. However, the type of charge and orbital ordering has been a subject of a long debate in the literature. So here for this low temperature phase, two LDA plus U studies have shown that the charge and orbital ordering does not fulfill the Anderson's criterion. So we have here these cubes that are either electron rich or electron poor. And what we have found for the surface is that the surface uniquely defines the charge and orbitally ordered state of the system. For example, yes? So Anderson's criterion says that one should have alternating iron 2 plus iron 3 plus sites. And as one can see here, one either has electron-rich or electron-poor such cubes. In Anderson's criterion, half of the sites should be iron 2 plus and half. So what we see here for the surface is that the surface layer is exclusively iron 3 plus, but we have a unique charge and orbitally ordered state in the deeper layers. And due to the reconstruction of the surface, we have actually a transition from a half metal in the bulk to an insulator at the surface. And this has been also observed in surface scanning tunneling spectroscopy experiments and also in a previous GGA plus U study. So what happens when we adsorb now water on the surface? So here, for the mixed adsorption mode, we see that we have a change in the orbital ordering of the system. And due to a partial charge and orbital ordering in the deeper layers, we obtain a half metal to an insulated to half metal transition. And indeed, we observe a unique charge and orbital order depending on the type of termination and the presence of adsorbate. So here, this is the vacancy structure, where at the position of the vacancies in the subsurface layer, we have iron 2 plus. And then when we adsorb water and OH groups in this termination, we can change the positions of the iron 2 plus sites. And even more interesting is when one adsorbs hydrogen on the surface, because this allows to reduce the surface and enhance the concentration of iron 2 plus in the surface layer, which influences the catalytic properties of the system. So we can use the adsorbates and the surface to manipulate the catalytic and electronic properties of the magnetite surface. So as I have shown you here, for isolated molecules, we have a dissociated adsorption, which is especially at surface defect sites, so surface oxygen vacancies. And for higher coverages, we have a crossover to a mixed adsorption mode that is stabilized by the formation of a hydrogen bonded network. And we also have a lifting of the square root two reconstruction on the surface. And as we have seen, we have the surface and adsorbates can induce a unique charge and orbitally ordered state. So in the second part of my talk, I'm going to talk about the system lanthanum luminate, strontium titanate. And so this system contains two simple bent insulators strontium titanate with an experimental band gap of 3.2 eV and lanthanum aluminate with an experimental band gap of 5.6 eV. And in the perovskite structure, we have a natural modulation of the electron density. So we have in lanthanum aluminate positively charged lanthanum oxide layers alternating with negatively charged aluminum dioxide layers, while in strontium titanate, we have formally neutral layers. So the question is, what happens if we have an interface? We have a charge discontinuity at the interface, and what properties can this lead to? So the research on this system was fueled by the experiments of Tom and Huang, who found a very strong, a very high conductivity in this interface and very high carrier density. However, in the further discussion, it became clear that the oxygen partial pressure plays a significant role. And in fact, one can associate this high conductivity with samples that are grown at relatively low oxygen pressure. However, if we increase the partial pressure in the gas phase, one reaches two additional functional properties like superconductivity in an intermediate region. And for the highest pressures, we have magnetism. And I would like to point out that here, the sheet resistance changes or is enhanced by 7 orders of magnitude. And we also have, again, as was shown yesterday for the strontium manganite, lanthanum manganite system, we have such an upturn of the sheet resistance for low temperatures. So as Peter Aguamonte said yesterday, that the lanthanum aluminate strontium titanate system may not be that interesting like the lanthanum titanate. In fact, actually, this system has been a source of quite unusual and unexpected behavior. And actually, the lanthanum titanate strontium titanate system perhaps is not that much different in a way that at the n-type interface, we again have a lanthanum oxide layer next to a titanium dioxide layer. And this is actually the building block of lanthanum titanate. So because this is a MOT insulator, we have looked in this system at the influence of electronic correlations within GGA plus U. And what we obtain for a superlattice containing the n-type interface is such a disproportionation in titanium 3 plus and titanium 4 plus in the interface layer, which is charged and orbitally ordered. And we have also a dilute layer of magnetic spins in the interface layer, which so we have features of magnetism at the interface of two non-magnetic materials. Looking at relaxations in this system, so both obtained within GGA and GGA plus U, we see that we have the strongest polarization in the interface layer, and this is similar to what was obtained, for example, by Satoshi and Nicholas Baldin. For the lanthanum titanate, strontium titanate system, so we have strong relaxations of oxygen towards the lanthanum aluminate and smaller relaxations of the titanium layers leading to a buckling in the interface layer. And although these vertical relaxations are pretty similar both in GGA and GGA plus U, they lead to quite important differences in the electronic behavior. So with this geometry within GGA, what we obtain is that it suppresses the charge ordering. There is still some residual orbital ordering. And we have a redistribution of charge throughout the strontium titanate part of the substrate. On the other hand, within the GGA geometry, GGA plus U geometry, due to some lateral relaxations of the oxygens around the titanium 3 plus sites, we have a stronger localization of the charge in the interface layer. And so we have no redistribution with the strontium titanate substrate. So recently, Manhart and collaborators found a very interesting behavior growing thin lanthanum aluminate films on a strontium titanate substrate. So they found that depending on the thickness, we can have an insulating behavior for superlattices up to 3 monolayers, and then above 4 monolayers, we have a switching to a conducting behavior. So at the first glance, these results do not correspond to the calculations for infinite superlattices of lanthanum aluminate strontium titanate, where we had a very robust behavior independent of the largely independent of the number of layers. However, we have to keep in mind that now we are dealing with a different situation. So here we have two polar discontinuities, one at the interface and one at the surface. And this leads to a completely different electronic behavior. So here we have looked at the relaxations of thin films on a strontium titanate substrate, varying the number of lanthanum aluminate layers. And we obtain a very uniform behavior. So we have a very strong outward relaxation of the lanthanum in these systems. And we have a strong buckling in the aluminum dioxide layers. However, we have almost negligible buckling in the surface lanthanum aluminate layer and also in the titanium dioxide layer at the interface. So if we estimate, so here you can see the vertical relaxations of the anions and cations in the system. And if we just take the point charges and estimate the ionic dipole per layer, one also observes a very uniform behavior, where we have a dipole moment of 0.7 in the lanthanum oxide layers and 0.5 in the aluminum dioxide layers. So if we just add these contributions, we obtain the ionic contribution to the total dipole moment. And we see that this contribution is about 60% of the Bayer dipole that we expect for a polar lanthanum aluminate film. So this means that the polarization of the lattice compensates a large amount of this of the electric field of the thin polar film. And indeed, it has a very important influence on the electronic properties. So if we keep the atoms at their bulk positions, all systems are metallic. However, after relaxation, we obtain the opening of a band gap. So here of 1.7 eV for the 1-mono layer lanthanum aluminate film, which gradually closes with increasing number of layers. And it collapses at around 5 monolayers of lanthanum aluminate on strontium titanate, close to the experimental critical thickness. So in order to understand what is the origin of this closing of the band gap, we have plotted the layer resolved density of states. And we can see here that the bottom of the conduction band is determined by the titanium D states in the interface layer. And what is most striking, we have such a gradual shift of the oxygen 2p band as they reach the surface. And the top of the conduction of the valence band is determined by the oxygen 2p band in the surface layer. So we obtain such a closing of the band gap, which is at two different regions in real space. So in contrast to this abrupt change in conductivity at around 4 monolayers of the uncapped lanthanum aluminate films on the strontium titanate surface, Huyen and collaborators observed a much smoother transition in films that are kept with a strontium titanate layer. And this transition starts already at around 2 monolayers of lanthanum aluminate film. And therefore, we have studied the influence of this capping layer. And what we find is that, so here you see the band gap for a 2-monolayer lanthanum aluminate film without the capping layer. So as soon as we cap it with a single monolayer of lanthanum of strontium titanate, we already almost close the band gap. And adding additional strontium titanate capping layers increases the density of states at the Fermi level, and the band gap is closed. So this is also confirmed in experiments, so in the sheet resistance. So for a 2-0 film, so without the capping layer, the film is insulating. However, adding a single capping layer already shows finite conductivity, and this the sheet resistance decreases with adding additional layers. However, the influence of these additional layers is much smaller than the influence of the first capping layer. So at first, we looked at whether this can be explained by the ionic relaxations in the films. And as one can see, the trends change dramatically. However, we have found that this ionic dipole of the system is largely independent of the number of strontium titanate capping layers and is mainly determined by the number of lanthanum aluminate layers. As you can see here, for 2 monolayers with a different number of capping layers, we have almost constant ionic dipole moment. So the ionic relaxations cannot explain this closing of the band gap. And we have found that this is actually an electronic effect. So here you see the projected density of states of an uncapped film. Again, you can see the shifts of the oxygen p bands as they reach the surface. And now when we add a surface strontium titanate layer, one can see that actually the closing of the band gap comes from the surface titanium dioxide layer. And it's connected to here a very dispersive band. And in order to gain more understanding in this system, we have plotted the band structure of the system. So here you see the uncapped film. The top of the valence band is at the end point, and the bottom of the conduction band is at the gamma point. So these are titanium DXY orbitals. And when we add a capping layer, the capping layer leads to a very dispersive band. And in fact, this band is very similar to a surface state of strontium titanate, which was also previously found by Padilla and Vanderbilt. And then adding additional layers increases the overlap between the conduction band, which is at the gamma point, and the valence band at the end point. So we have a closing of the band gap, which is indirect both in real space and in reciprocal space. And in fact, as I said, the bottom of the conduction band is has a DXY character, the titanium D bands at the interface, while at the surface we have oxygen holes of oxygen 2p character. And we have looked also at the effective masses. So the holes have a much lower mobility than the electrons. And adding the capping layer, one reduces a bit the effective mass of the holes in the surface. So on the whole, we have the formation of an electron hole bilayer on the surface, which can be an interesting system, for example, for studying excitonic phenomena. And this is, in fact, also supported by the sheet resistance and hole measurements. So the data could only be fitted in a two-band model, where we have one band that has an electron character and the other band has a hole character. So here I would like to summarize the results. So we have seen that we have quite a distinct behavior of infinite superlattices with the n-type interface. So here we have a very local compensation mechanism for the formation of the titanium 3+, titanium 4+ charge-ordered layer. On the other hand, for thin lanthanum aluminate films on strontium titanate, we have a very strong polar distortion of the film. And this polar distortion allows the film to remain insulating until we have a crossover to an electronic reconstruction at around 5 monolayers. And we have seen that a strontium capping layer is an additional parameter that can be used to trigger this insulated to metal transition in the thin lanthanum aluminate films. And here, once again, this influence of the strontium titanate capping layer adding an additional potential shift that closes the band gap. So before I finish, I would like to acknowledge the people that were involved in these studies. And perhaps as the first thing, to acknowledge the PhD students. So the water adsorption on magnetite was done by Narasimhan Mulakaluri. The influence of the strontium titanate capping layer by Katrin Otte. And the first studies done in collaboration with Matthias Scheffler. And we have profited from discussions and collaborations with a lot of experimental groups. And for the perovskite interfaces, this is the result of a long-term collaboration with Warren Pickett from UC Davis. And here again, we have collaborations with Jochen Mannhardt. And the last part was a collaboration with the 20 group with Alex Brinkman, Mark Huyden. And so with this, I would like to end. And thank you very much for your attention.
So thank you very much for this very nice talk and the perfect timing. Questions? Have you looked at or thought about what happens if you apply voltage perpendicular to yourself or your heterostructure in both voltage directions?
You mean the second system, the lanthanum aluminate films?
Yeah.
I think that this has been done actually experimentally by the group of Jochen Mannhardt. So one can change this transition, the critical thickness, by applying a voltage. So, and I think it's also understandable because one changes the bending of the bands and then the critical thickness where the reconstruction takes place by doing this.
I just wanted to ask for your GGA plus U calculation, where the U was applied, in which atom, and how big was the U?
So for which study?
That's for LAOSTM.
Yeah, so here we have applied a relatively high value of U equal to 8, because this is the parameter that is needed to make tetragonal lanthanum titanate a MOT insulator. So it's slightly higher, but we have also studied the influence on U, and we find a disproportionation for values.
But that U was applied where? To titanium or to oxygen?
To titanium.
But it's empty.
It's not empty at the interface. At the interface, you have half an electron, and if you have a larger periodicity, then you have one electron on one side and zero on the next side. So in principle, you have this would be the influence would be much smaller, for example, for the thin films where you have this polar distortion and you have actually almost a very small occupation of the titanium D band. So here, the U would not have such a large effect as when you have really half an electron per site.
I also have another question regarding the use of GGA, because sort of people have carefully studied the influence of GGA versus LDA for this off-centric movement. Do you think if you had used LDA, the results would have been different? And,
So you mean that there are studies that for ferroelectric films, it's more suitable to use LDA.
Right.
So, well, it could be that there are subtle differences, but yeah, this was just for consistency. We have used the GGA approach.
I have a question on the first part. Some technical details on how the calculations were done. How do you vary the oxygen pressure? How large of a system you do, cutoffs, how reliable is all this?
Well, all these things have been, so concerning the thickness, we have assured that the calculations are converged with respect to the thickness of the slab, so we are using slabs that are... Yes, this is so here in this we combine density functional theory with concepts from thermodynamics. So in this so-called ab initio atomistic thermodynamics, so here you describe you compare the surface energy of different terminations with different stoichiometries, and this is done by using the chemical potentials of oxygen and all constituents in the system. So the ranges of stability of these chemical potentials are set by the oxygen poor and oxygen rich conditions. And it is the chemical potential comes in a second step, more or less. You don't have it directly in the system, but you additionally add it by calculate. I have shown here the formula. So here, you see the formula for the surface energy, and in principle, here you have the chemical potentials of the different constituents, and they are defined by the oxygen poor, oxygen rich conditions, and so on. We calculate total energies, but you don't need derivatives, but you calculate the surface energies for different chemical potentials. So you vary the chemical potential and you calculate this surface energy for these different. So in principle, you have a linear dependence on the chemical potentials.
So, excuse me, I think the question is, E total must depend on something to do with number of oxygens and number of hydrogens.
Yeah, you can see here.
So I want to know how that dependence was included.
Right. This is directly this formula that you see here. So you have the the total system and you subtract the number of atoms of each species.
The question is how did you compute the dependence of E total on number of oxygen and number of hydrogen? That's
so you mean how I define my chemical potential?
E total, that thing right there.
E total is the total energy from the calculation.
Number of oxygen and number of hydrogen.
Yes, but
how did you compute it? That's all.
Okay. So you have a system with a top molecules on the surface, and you perform a DFT calculation, and this is your total energy that enters
right
here.
So I guess this question is with how many atoms?
It depends on how many
do you need? How much different coverages do you need to extract the information?
Well, in principle, you could have, I mean...
Right, he doesn't want to know the principle, he wants to know the practice, what was actually done.
In principle, you can take all possible terminations that you want to look at, and you add this, so this adds one plane in this phase diagram.
Right, so continuing my role as my distinguished colleague, interpreter, he wants to, in principle, that's there. In practice, how many different things do you need?
Yeah, well, for example, this calculation includes about 30 different terminations that were calculated. And in principle, it's an infinite.
Of course, in principle.
Yeah. Well, that's
right.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the practical question.
Rosita, you showed the temperature dependence of the LAO-STO interface, where these various phases were noted down. I'd like to comment on that. Yeah.
This one?
Yeah. No, one more. Yeah, exactly. First of all, I'd like to indicate that the red curve at the bottom doesn't show the interface properties, but it's the bulk conduction. And then the top curves, if we grow films in Augsburg at these high oxygen pressures, they are in fact also superconducting. So our experience is that there's just a superconducting ground state. Mm-hmm. With the samples that we produce, independent of the oxygen.
Well, pressure. I don't know. I cannot comment on Twente and Augsburg grown samples. This is.
I think that also refers to.
I think the critical temperatures also for the magnetic effects were really also comparable to the superconducting critical temperature. And okay, there could be subtle differences.
Well, I'd like to remark that there was also a sample exchange around Robin mm-hmm. exchange, and samples grown in Augsburg at high oxygen pressures were not reported by the 20 group to be magnetic, and samples supposed to be magnetic grown by the 20 group were found to be superconducting in Geneva.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Well, I think that there are still issues that are not completely resolved. It's also the problem of transferring samples in air.
Exactly. That's why I want to indicate
distances, so you can have any types of orbits on.
That's why
on
I wanted
surface.
To indicate that this R versus T plot mm-hmm. May not be the ultimate truth.
Mm-hmm.
So just to pursue that slightly, may I ask? What is the, let's say, theoretical status of the predictions of magnetism in charge order? And by this I mean they were done with various LDA plus U, GGA plus U kind of techniques.
Yes.
Do we have a way of knowing do those techniques actually produce the correct ground state of the model? Do we have independent information on the validity of those techniques in these doping ranges?
You mean experimental or?
Theoretical.
Okay, well, I mean, these superlattices were initially done for N-type interfaces, so solely N-type interfaces. So this is a system that experimentally is perhaps very challenging to grow. Usually one has either coupled interfaces or also one has also problems of roughness. So I think these N-type superlattices are just a limiting case where you have a local compilation mechanism. I think there was a recent study by Harold Wang where they grew 25 layers of lanthanum aluminate, and in this case they found a much larger concentration of carriers at the interface, because the concentration of carriers usually in the thin films is much lower than this half an electron. So perhaps this limit is the limit of a local compensation mechanism. I think another thing is, perhaps one thing that may be in favor of charge ordering is this upturn of the sheet resistance at low temperatures. But we have, at the moment, no evidence with low temperature measurements for such a charge order state. Perhaps just the transition temperature is could be quite low. So concerning LDA plus U calculations, this state is the ground state, so it has the lowest energy.
Right. And my question was really a theoretical one. Do we have reason to trust or not trust LDA plus U in this parameter, kind of parameter range? You know,
I don't think I think we can trust it. The thing is whether this corresponds to an experimental situation that is realizable.
Can I ask a rather naive question on these interfaces? And I'm asking this as a complete outsider to the area, but you show these very large, you show the potentials growing, and they're of the order of EVs at these, you know, polar interfaces. But have you, for example, considered competing ground states which involve interdiffusion of strontium and lanthanum? I mean, theoretically, forget about the experimental situation, but theoretically, I would think that under any growth condition, if I have EVs of energy, I'd interdiffuse atoms rather than form these exotic ground states.
Well, there have been studies of interdiffusion at the interface.
Computational.
Also computational. This is Wilmot et al. It was a PRO, I think, 2007 or 8. The thing is, yeah, so if one has a local compensation mechanism, then one wouldn't have this necessity for a band shift. And also one can have additional phenomena like adsorption of OH groups on the surface and other surface reconstruction that force the charge in the interface layer, which would change the band shifts. But I would say this is the only plausible explanation of the thickness-dependent transition in these thin films. I don't know. Jochen, you wanted to say?
Hello.
I must say, I thought that I was getting in the lion's den by not showing any DMFD today.
No, it's fine. Okay. Few supported comments. So first to Tanusri. So if you have full bands and empty bands, you have a shift you have. Yeah. So LDA plus you give something. So about the charge, so the electronic structures give for mode insulator quite good. If you have, and maybe also charge transfer, spectral function, of course, is bad and you need DMFT. But question, do you understand for this iron 304, why the bulk give you some wrong orbital in this Anderson structure and Sophia's give you correct, so I have no idea.
You mean what is the reason for deviation from the Anderson?
In bulk.
Well, I think that
people did some wrong calculation, didn't find the correct charge orbital spin structure.
Well, I think that these two studies, they took the experimentally determined structure, and with this experimentally determined structure, one obtains this violation of Anderson's criterion.
Did somebody relax structure? Somebody relax structure for bulk?
I presume that in later, perhaps not in these two studies that I have shown. But okay, the thing is also the space group of the structure is not 100% resolved. So I think there were studies that have shown also further alternative types of charge and orbital ordering, even some...
Yeah, but maybe it's not correct structure, because George always tells that there is a 16 non-equivalent atom in this structure.
I just didn't want to... my point was that actually the surface itself influences the type of charge and orbital ordering in the bulk. So it can uniquely determine this type.
But you don't know what's wrong with bulk calculation.
Well, I guess perhaps, experimentalists should provide a new structure and then
okay.
Perhaps one.
Thank you.
I'm not sure.
I'd like to come back to the question of the interdiffusion of yours. Of course, that happens in the semiconductor case. It doesn't seem to be happening in the oxides. Presumably due to kinetics. It's just the energy which is massing during growth that it could diffuse. And I think experimentally we know that diffusion may be there, but it's not controlling the interface conductivity, because interfaces, the same interfaces grown LaOSTO with a p-type termination, they are always insulating, which one couldn't understand if interdiffusion was going on. And the interdiffusion, as Rosica said, couldn't explain why suddenly the conductivity switches on independent of the growth conditions if one goes from 3 to 4 unit cells of lanthanum aluminate. So some interdiffusion may be there, but it apparently is not the controlling mechanism.
And I think that for the p-type interface, when you have band shifts in the opposite direction, you don't. This does not lead to an occupation of the titanium d band, and possibly this is also the reason that one.
So I just want to follow up on Sasha's comments. The LDA gap of these systems is a 1 EV or 2 EV too small.
Yes, this is true.
You add a U of 8 EV, that shifts the gap by 4 EV. So shouldn't your gaps be...
Why by 4 EV? So you have one band gap, so this one is about 2 EV, and then you have the 3.7 EV.
Well, the titanium D, you put a U of 8 on it. Yeah.
Not for these calculations.
Oh, it wasn't this
here,
one. Oh,
so, okay. So in principle, if you put a U, you enlarge the band gap of strontium titanate by about 0.7 EV. But otherwise, concerning the mechanism of the closing of the band gap, so perhaps you may have some some changes, some deviations for the critical thickness. But concerning the mechanism of closing, it would... I would expect to remain the same.
Okay.
Okay. Really nice.
One quick comment about that. Because if you want to take into account what Sasha said, that the fill bands also move with U because of a U over 2 type of process, then you really have to take into account a U or not also, because it also is 60. So everything.
Well, actually, we have done this for the p-type interface because in the initial studies it was said that there are no oxygen defects, so we tried to make an insulating interface by putting a U on oxygen, which almost worked out, but not completely. I think it's a more exotic way of having correlation effects on the oxygen.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again. And the next talk will be given by Satoshi.